It is November 28th. That's a Sunday, and it's time for another Curmudgeon's Corner. See how I shook that up? I did it different than I usually do.
Oh my gosh! Yes, you got me all fugazi.
Yeah, I know, all confusing. And anyway, it is another week and time for another Curmudgeon's Corner. I'm Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Bo with me, here we go. So just to give
this
you,
is do we have any idea? This is number Curmudgeon's Corner number. I don't know what.
I can actually tell you. Give me 1 second, and I'll tell you for the new Curmudgeon's Corner, not counting
for the new Curmudgeon's Corner,
Have a count of the ones we did in college until I find the damn box where I have all the tapes.
Okay.
At which point I'll start posting them online tapes and embarrassing everybody. But okay, we have. There's a count here somewhere. Hold on.
Drum roll.
What the hell? Okay, wait. Oh, okay. This is episode
183.
Of the new Curmudgeon's Corner.
Damn.
Yep.
Damn. Okay. Well, it's pretty impressive. Okay. All right,
yeah,
cool.
So, we've been doing pretty good. So, anyway, for today's topics, I'm going to talk a little bit, for those of you who read my blog, you may have noticed that, we underwent the purchase of a new car. I noticed that in my notes here, I wrote down new can, but it's actually a car, not a can. And so I'll mention a little bit about that. We will of course talk a little bit about what's going on in Korea, north and south. Then we're going to talk a little bit about, I'd made a return trip to, our first trip to the Windows store that I talked briefly about last week. And Yvonne has some thoughts on non-iPad tablets. And, then finally Yvonne read an interesting article about tech turkeys for 2010. And we'll talk a little bit about that. So let's get started.
Sam, so let me ask a question. So basically, I mean, you last, I believe, I'm not mistaken, purchased a car, you, sometime in the mid-90s, correct?
Yes.
Before this one.
For me personally, it was December 1995 was the last time I purchased a car.
Damn, that's very impressive. I gotta admit, you know, that's kind of self-restraint, maintaining a car. I mean, reality is that modern cars.
And I will point out, that car is still going.
Yes.
This is the
It's
the
still
other
going.
Car.
Right. Right. I gotta say that I admire your self-restraint to going that long without, you know, splurging on a new vehicle. I think it's an admirable thing. I mean, you know, some people are talking about the fact that environmentally speaking, okay, the building of a new car is probably, you know, a very environmental impactful event. So therefore, the longer you can hold, it's better to hold out longer to buy a new car than to go like after 3 years and get a new Prius.
Although there is some balance based on, you know, how much you drive versus the difference in energy efficiency, blah 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 blah. But you know, because there have been studies that show that like you would save comparing, for instance, reducing the improving the mileage of all new cars sold versus, you know, getting the oldest 10% of cars off the road. You're better off getting the oldest 10% of cars off the road.
Now, that's true. Yes, that's correct. Yes.
You know, so anyway, here's the story. My general philosophy, and, you know, Brandy generally agrees with this, is, you know, drive a car into the ground. You know, don't consider replacing a car until it is, you know, incapable of moving under its own power anymore, or, you know, and we were almost there. So, like, let me give you a quick, you know, here's what happened. Was it Thursday or Friday? I think it was probably actually only Friday. You know, Brandy was driving somewhere or other, and all of a sudden, you know, smoke started billowing out of her car. which is always a good sign.
That's not,
you know.
Yes, it's a great omen. It's a good omen for a car dealer. I think, you know, they're thrilled. They're, oh, look, a customer. Okay, there yeah. you go.
Anyway. So anyway, she dropped it off at the Midas that she likes and that we've used for the last few years. They went through the process of basically they looked for oil leaks and stuff because like the oil was pouring out of the damn car, you know.
oh God, yeah, always a great sign.
Yeah, so they looked at it first. They're like, it looks like, you know, maybe something got in and like
gasket.
Well, first they're like, it looks like a mouse ate through like a hose or something. You know.
Okay. Well, that would be easy enough to fix. Okay.
Yeah, that would be easy enough to fix, and then they ruled that out. And okay. then they're like, well, maybe yeah, the sensor, something, and no, they ruled that out. And then there's so eventually, anyway, the point they got to was they confirmed that there were some set of valves that were fucked up and needed to be replaced. Okay, replacing them, and I'm not a car person. I don't know what the fuck they were talking about. And Brandy was doing the conversation with anyway, so this is like third hand. But anyway, so some set of valves or something needed to be replaced, blah, blah, blah. It cost like $800. And even for them to get to the point where they could diagnose that, they'd already done like, you know, $150 worth of labor to dig in there and figure out what was going on. But they said, look, we can't tell if this is the only problem. If this doesn't,
that's what I was going to say.
If this doesn't fix it, then you basically need to rebuild or replace the whole engine. You know, because it's something deep inside. And
how many miles were on the car anyway? At this point,
I posted that on my blog earlier. Let me dig it up. I made a post called Car Transition on Saturday, the 27th, and 246,000 miles.
It's a good number.
Yeah, so anyway, so basically the bottom line was we could spend $800 and maybe fix the problem. If it did fix the problem, we're home clear. It's excellent, good. It's probably good for a bunch more miles. If it didn't fix the problem, we've thrown $800 down the toilet, and we'd probably be talking thousands to rebuild the engine. And this is a, you know, 15-year-old car with 250,000 miles on it. It ain't worth thousands.
No. You know? It's worth hundreds. Yep. Yes.
So we talked about it a little bit and decided that this wasn't a gamble worth making, basically. You know,
yeah.
We could have tried to hold out, you know, and in some cases I've said, you know, damn it, you know, spend the, you know, $5,000 every 10 years to replace the engine entirely. You could have a car run 100 years and that would be cool. You know, why ever get another car? You know, their Model T is still on the road. Yeah. You just have to put the investment into it. Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
But
those cars are worth hundreds of a used Model T right now is worth hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. Okay, so you know you are putting the money in something that if you decided to sell it, you would get the money back. But on this thing, you're going to be pouring money down the toilet. You may not get a working car back.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, you know.
It's all
a question. There's an inflection point at a certain point where a used car's value starts going back up again due to rarity. But you're usually talking, you know, 40 or 50 years down the line.
And it's some models only, face it. I mean, there are some 30, 40-year-old cars that nobody would give. They weren't worth anything then, and they're not worth anything now.
I would say that just means you haven't waited long enough for the inflection point. Because even if you take, like, some piece of shit, bottom-of-the-line car, if it's old enough that there's only, like, 10 of them left in the world, it's going to increase in value just for the rarity.
There are some exceptions to that, even to that rule.
Roman trash is worth a lot of money now because it's so rare.
I guess if you may have to wait a couple thousand years.
A Ford
Pinto, that's 1,000 years old, yes, I guess in good shape, yes, it would be worth a ton of money in 1,000 years.
See what
but
I mean?
Even right now, a Ford Pinto still has not reached that inflection point.
And it may take a few hundred years. But, if you're willing to be patient,
You may make your money back at some point. Yes, absolutely.
Or your distant ancestors.
Or your descendants, yes.
Or descendants, I should say.
Your descendants, yes.
So if I'm willing to hold on to my car so that my great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter can have something. Yeah. Anyway, we weren't. we weren't going to do that. So
it's good strategy.
She had them stick the engine together enough so that it can probably drive the 2 miles to the dealership so we can get like the $250 trade-in for the damn thing that they'll give for anything that'll drive onto the lot. Now it probably won't drive off the lot again, but fuck it, their problem at that point. They specifically say, we don't care if you can drive it here, we'll give you the trade-in, whatever. It's probably worth that much for parts,
Probably can get quite a few parts off of it, I'm sure.
So we decided we're going to go look. Now, of course, Brandy and I have, it's somewhat different philosophies about the way to do shopping in general. This in part is a typical male-female thing. Like, I like to do my research, know exactly what I want, go in, get the thing I want, leave. And also, like, before I even start, have an exact budget. Like, I'm going to spend this much amount money and then I'm going to get the best thing I can get for that amount of money. She's more, wander around.
Touchy-feely. She wants to,
touchy-feely, wander around, find the thing you like, and then get it, And, this manifested all the time in sort of shopping, she actually went out for the Black Friday stuff. You couldn't pay me enough to go anywhere near that shit.
I'm with you on that.
And she's like, it'll be fun. And so she and Amy got up early in the morning, went to the stuff. Fun. And they think it's fun. So I have no idea.
I'm with you. not fun. No.
Anyway. We picked Amy up from something she was at, or we were looking for coffee, or I forget. We went and had coffee, and we talked about this over coffee, and we sort of agreed on a general approach. And basically, I said, this is her car. And she does the money stuff in our house anyway, because, I never paid anything on time because I'm just not good at that shit. So for the last couple of years, she's done all that stuff. So I'm like, you're the one who knows how much we can afford. You're the one who knows this. This is your car. I may give some opinions here and there, but in the end, this is your call. We were heading home, and then I'm like, well, why don't we stop at, that dealership over there? And of course, that's the end of everything there. So she found one she liked. She looked at a couple things. She found a couple she liked. Then a salesman talked to her and showed her a list of other cars and said, this one would be good for you. It's in your price range and blah, blah, blah. Meets all your criteria. Almost all. It was missing like one or two minor things. And so they pull up the car. She looks at it. We decide we're going to have lunch and then test drive it. By the time we walk to lunch, because there's a diner like a few feet away, she'd already essentially made up her mind she wanted this car. But she test drove it after lunch, and it was a done deal. So then it was just like, let's sign all the damn papers. We had to take Amy to some event. She was having a recital, singing. So we did that, and then we came back and signed all the papers. One thing is it's been a while since I did this, but one thing that amused me is just how willing, how eager they are, and I knew this, but how eager they are to get you off the damn lot with a car,
Of course, God.
But here's the thing, we didn't.
You hadn't experienced it in a long time.
I hadn't experienced it in a long time, but I mean, it's like we did not. We left with the car without having handed over a single penny. Now we promised. We promised them that we would bring them the down payment on Wednesday once I transferred cash from one account to another. But they're like, "Here, take the car. Take it. Take it. Take it." you know.
Oh, it's beautiful. And oh, there you go.
We this is a used car. We got a 2007. Brandy, yeah, I've always had the philosophy. I want to buy. I want to take whatever amount I can spend, and I want a new car because I know I'm going to keep it forever and run it into the ground, even if it means I get less car. And a lower sort of name brand, like, you know, I don't get as good a car as I could have, but get a new one. Brandy's philosophy is get like a 2 or 3 year old car with not a huge number of miles on it, and she's happy. So,
well, it's kind of a break even situation in the respect that you're talking about, because one of the things, if you get obviously a new car and you're going to run it until it dies, obviously you're going to pay more, but you are going to get a number of more years on the car than right. You would. You know, it depends on what kind of depreciation you wound up taking on the car that you picked up. There's a lot of factors, but you know, it also depends who the previous owner was. If they treated it like shit the first 2 years, it maybe shortened its life a lot longer than average. Yeah, you know, so that's kind of a little bit of a gamble there, but you know, it's not a bad gamble.
And I mean, this car isn't super low mileage. I mean, it's like, you know, 50 something.
Okay.
Yeah, but okay. You know, whatever. It's okay. It looks like it's in decent shape. Blah 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 blah. You know, it'll do the job. Whatever.
All right.
And like I said, if I was going to get a new car for the same price range, I'd end up with a lot less car.
Yes.
Very
true.
It's a trade-off. We'll see. Like if I stick to my new car stance once mine dies, which, you know, honestly, I am completely shocked that my 1996 Saturn is still running. You know, I expect it to die at any moment. You know,
we thought it was close to death
several times.
A couple of years ago, right? And honestly,
at that point, I made the decision, and I did pour a couple $1,000s into it to keep it running, you know. But unlike the situation with Brandy, it wasn't you spend $800 and it might fix it. It was, you know, spend $1,500 and it will fix it.
That's right. And it did. The car is still chugging along.
Now, you know, it has issues. You know, it's not a perfect car. You know,
it had issues 10 years ago, for crying out loud. Okay, so, you know, I don't think they got better with age.
And now having the two of them in the driveway, it's kind of sad, the comparison. You know, the Saturn looks a little pitiful next to the newer car, but you know, because it's pretty beat up. It's got you turn it on, it makes a lot of noise. You know. So, but look, I fully expect that within the next 6 months, mine will die too. Now, maybe I'll get lucky.
You think?
You know, maybe. But
why do you say that? I mean, what is it doing right now that would make you think that it's going to go kaput? What is the worst thing it's doing?
The worst thing it's doing that I've noticed recently is that the idle speed, it idles a bit fast, longer than it should before the idle, you know, comes down. Like if you
mean when you fire it up when it's cold?
No. When you pull up to a stop sign and push in the clutch, you know.
Yeah.
Now, normally the RPMs will like fall down to 1,000 really fast, you know, when you're in idle. Now it's sticking at 2,000 for a while before it slips down to 1,000.
Nah, that's not that big a deal. If that's what you think, if you think that that's the reason it's going to die,
No. And that's not. You asked me what's the worst thing it's doing.
That is not
right
a signal. That's not a signal of near death.
No, I understand. And look, it doesn't have any specific signal of near death that's actually happening. Like, there's nothing going on right now that's like, oh my god, I should take it to a mechanic.
It's not billowing smoke. It's not stalling on you. It's not, you know, refusing to start in the morning.
No, if it was doing anything like this, then I'd already have it at a mechanic. No, it's not doing any sign of like, oh my god, like I'm not sure I can drive to work. You know, but it's just it's like, look, it's all the little things add up. Like for instance, for over a year now, the power locks haven't worked properly. Now, this isn't going to stop the damn car from working.
It's just annoying.
You know,
and makes you leave your car unlocked.
Well, it makes me sometimes leave the car unlocked. More often what it does is that basically it's got a short in it. So all of a sudden, mm-hmm. for no reason, it'll try repeatedly to lock the car. So it'll be lock, 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 even though it's already locked. And it makes a noise like grrr, while it's doing this over and over again.
And, oh, lovely sound.
And in order to stop it, you can only stop it from the driver's side driver's side controls, which is good. I'm glad it's not the passenger side control you can only fix it from. But you have to sort of put your hand on the lock and unlock buttons and exactly balance them very carefully, and it'll stop. Okay. Now, and so what?
Oh, that's great. So, oh, gotta love that.
So when I get out of the car to lock it, I lock it, and then I very carefully do the balancing thing, so it's not doing that when I leave the car. But sometimes
you forget.
I never forget, because it makes an angry noise if I
okay
if I forget. But sometimes it will slip. And even if I've balanced it, you know, who knows what random factor causes it, but it slips and starts doing that. And so sometimes I'll come back to my car and it's sitting there growling, you know. But here's the thing. When it's doing this, it's draining the fucking battery.
The battery. That's what I was thinking. Yes.
So in the last year, probably 3 or 4 times, I've come back to a dead battery. Because this damn thing has started going and killed the battery while I was out.
Well, I got a solution for you.
Yes.
Take the fuse out of the frickin' lock, the electric locks, and just close them manually from now on.
Yeah. That's possible. That's possible.
Yep.
Anyway, so far it's been an annoying. Anyway, yeah. It's things like that, you know, and let's see what else. The dome light doesn't work. The little knob fell off the control for the defrost recently.
That sucks.
Again, none of these things stop the car from running. Oh, the headliner is shredded to bits and like hangs in my face.
That's annoying. Why don't you just rip it out then?
Because I feel bad for it. You know, it's like,
just rip out the headliner for crying out loud. I'd rather not have it hanging on my face.
Anyway,
rip the damn thing out.
Anyway, so it's got lots of little things like that, and like I said, none of them will kill the car, but it's showing its signs of age, and you know, and it makes, and it's very loud compared to other cars I've noticed. Like if.
Oh, I can imagine this. You know, you know what you should do.
Like, if
you should record the sound emanating from your car, and have the guys at the NPR, whatchamacallit, the car talk, listen to the sound of your car, see what they say.
Yeah, you know, like if I drive by, people know I'm driving by.
That's great. That's beautiful.
The last folks we took it to, like, I stopped taking it to the Saturn dealership because at some point almost 2 years ago, the Saturn dealership said, you know, it would be irresponsible to fix this car.
Oh gosh, you gotta love when a dealer refuses to fix a car over that.
And so we started taking it to the Midas, and the Midas is like, oh well, you know, that's just what 15-year-old GM cars sound like. Yeah. So
anyway, all right. So
we're way past time for a break. Let's take a break for your poem of the week, and we'll be back for a couple more things. We'll be back after this. Enjoy your poem.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
I Could Not Ask Other Flowers, by Bronwyn Tate. Today multiplied, a layered wealth of strata along the sloped face of the work, ankle bone, wind-blown grain, suck of honeysuckle, cell of honeycomb. Approach the hedgerow with reverence, do a road loft. consent, O Lord, to bless. Spade in hand, cleave what knotted. I am of the same stripe as you who cry into the thorned canopy. I follow your gaze to the engraved steeple, bricked with birds' nests. Talus, Alveus, narrate the landscape of this body. As thoughts pile up, bent, twined, twisted as flowers.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, we're back. So we basically burned two segments on that, even though we didn't take a break. So what's next, Korea?
Yep, let's talk about Korea.
So what the fuck happened in Korea, Yvonne? They were like shelling each other, and their military exercises going on, and
Okay, now here's the thing I haven't gotten clarity on. Okay, the North Koreans started shelling this little island, which, aside from having a civilian population, has some kind of military outpost. Okay, now there is what. The North Koreans keep saying that the reason they started the shelling was because the South Koreans were conducting some exercises, okay? And they were shelling near the border, and therefore that's why they started shelling. Now, I have no idea whether that's true or not. Regardless, whether they were shelling near the border or not, the North Koreans just went wacko and just started shelling the town. And so, now, here's the thing about it. They haven't really retaliated. And you know, the defense minister in South Korea quit because apparently they forced him to resign because he didn't retaliate or come up with any retaliation, even though there's a lot of South Koreans that are just, you know, want to just blow the bejesus out of North Korea right now, finally. They're sick of it. And so, you know, well, you got to remember the incidents that they had. They've had the kidnappings.
Yep.
They had the torpedoing of the Navy ship.
Yep.
Now you go into this shelling. I mean, seriously, I'm like, at what point when does this start a fucking war?
Well,
it would have been 50, 60 years ago to a fucking war would have already ensued.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm like,
you know, and this, more than anything else, this reminds me so far, you know, of the Israelis during the first Gulf War. You know, when Saddam started throwing Scud missiles at Israel, and Israel refrained from doing anything because,
yeah,
you know, they knew that. You know, and they knew, and George Bush Sr. had, you know, impressed upon them the fact that their retaliating would have made things much, much worse, much, you know,
right,
and would have escalated the conflict overall. And that's exactly what Saddam Hussein wanted, et cetera, et cetera. And so they remarkably refrained from doing jack shit, even though Saddam Hussein was throwing missiles at them every day. Yeah.
And they were chomping at the bit of doing something.
I think that's very similar to what's going on right now. I mean, the right thing to do here is probably nothing and ignore these fuckers, because that's exactly what North Korea wants. They are trying to provoke a conflict here. Now, what's going
on in their mind? And I keep replaying the scenario in my mind. Okay, I'm sorry. If the North Koreans went in and just fucking bomb the bejesus out of, you know, where the command and control structures are in North Korea, how quickly does this regime collapse?
Well, right. And that's the flip side of this, is that, you know, North Korea is not in good shape. I mean, they do have a large military, and the military gets the bulk of all the resources that are there. But nevertheless,
yeah,
North Korea is not in that good shape. If you decapitated the leadership here, and South Korea started, you know, rolling in the troops or whatever, it isn't clear how long North Korea could last. Now, if as I said, because the military has the bulk of the resources, the military is much better off than the country as a whole.
Yeah, but that's all relative.
It's all relative. They might be able to put up a decent defense, but they're also, there's also the fear that, like, would China get into it? And, you know, they might not, but they might. You know, China isn't particularly fond of the North Koreans as they are now, but they are fond of sort of the strategic buffer that North Korea provides. Yeah, so it's a very unstable situation. If South Korea or the U.S. decided to do some sort of retaliatory action, it becomes a very, very unstable situation. And, you know, yes, there is the possibility that, you know, the North Korean government would almost immediately fold under pressure. But there's also the possibility that they could put up a decent resistance and you'd have a conflict that would be very, very messy and could escalate.
Well, but here's the one thing. I honestly, I feel that...
And remember,
this
got,
is a scenario,
they've
not
got,
so
they've
much.
They've got like one or two nukes.
They do. But how are they going to deliver on them anyway? I mean, do you really think, I mean, they could lob it in the air? They don't have them. I mean, what are they going to do? I don't think that any of the nukes that they have are being capable of place atop any of the missiles they created. They certainly won't be able to get a fucking airplane on it to go and, like, airdrop it anywhere. So,
truck?
So what?
Truck? Boat?
Truck? Well, I mean, but if you go in and you go in full bore... I mean, what? So what? They're going to drive a truck? Well, I guess the one thing is if they commit suicide, I guess. Here's the problem about the North Koreans dropping a nuke. They drop a nuke, say, near, you know, wherever, I think Seoul, they get hit by the radiation themselves, too.
Well, you know, not as much because what North Korea has are really small. I mean, it's not even going to take out a whole city. It's going to take out like a few
blocks.
Not
even. Well, then, I mean, you know. But here's the other thing. I don't see, honestly, this is not a scenario of like Iraq or Afghanistan or something or whatever. This is more a scenario, think of East and West Germany. Let's face it. The East Germans were sick and tired of being under the fucking communist regime. They, they wanted reunification. These guys up in North Korea, it's almost the same fucking thing. I mean, come on. These people are starving, for crying out loud. Starving, okay? I mean, I don't think that any of these fucking people right now and it's not like some foreign invader trying to take them over. It's their own country that's been divided for a number of years. I don't think that there is any support whatsoever for this regime other than the fact that they're keeping them under the gun, just like just like in East Germany. And I'm like, if this fucking regime collapses and reunification happens, it's not going to be some kind of a freaking, civil war between the North Koreans.
Well, yeah.
So
now part of that, you know, if you look into it too, is like, let's say South Korea did do that and North Korea like folded and suddenly South Korea owns North Korea. There's one Korea again. That's a huge new burden on South Korea too.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I mean, it is. It is an enormous economic burden on them. Absolutely.
And
it
so,
is.
So, like,
I mean, on Germany, reunification burden was enormous as well.
Well, right. And are the South Koreans really? I mean, of course, everyone says, unification would be wonderful. But, well, not everyone. But, there are people who say unification would be wonderful, but at what cost? And are they really willing to bear the burden of, because the economic impact on South Korea of suddenly taking over North Korea and being responsible for that would be massive.
I totally agree. Now, I was going to look at right now some stats. I'm like, let's see. North Korea has population. What are we talking about here? We're talking about shit. That's a lot of fucking people. 24 million fucking people. Damn. I thought it was less than that. 20. So that's a lot of people. South Korea, let's see. Hold on. Let's see. South Korea is. Tell you in a second. Talking here. Forty-eight million people. So it's 2-1 population wise, South Korea to the north.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty big burden right there to grow a country like 50% like that.
South
Koreans are extremely rich. They certainly have an economy that's, with 48 million people, that's about the size of Brazil. It's about their GDP and purchasing power parity is $1.5 trillion. It's enormous. And I mean, so I don't know. But still, it's quite a, it would be quite a burden. It was on the Germans. I mean, you know, I mean, they're still paying for that. And now I would, you would ask the Germans, would they not have reunified? I don't know. I think that even the Germans that bemoan like how much it costs would still, you know, like the fact that there is a reunified Germany instead of right. a separate one. But so
yeah, most likely. So what do we think is going to happen here? This is moving fairly quickly, and so by the time we put out this podcast, things may have changed a bit. But
You know what? I don't know.
Is going to blow over again, and we're not going to get much of anything happening.
I don't know. There is a growing sentiment in South Korea that they just don't want another incident to blow over. Mm. I mean, these are just too many in too short amount of time. I mean, that's the one thing. I don't know if this incident will just blow over.
Well, and like,
I don't know.
Some of the latest news as we're recording this is China's calling for some urgent talks and getting the countries together to have some conversations, blah, blah, blah.
Because now China is very worried that the South Koreans are just not going to, you know, just sit idly by and not do anything anymore. I mean, it's
as we speak, the U.S. is carrying out military exercises with South Korea, naval exercises, off the coast, and, you know, basically saying, sending the message that, you know, stop fucking with us, you know, but, I don't know. I still think this is something where, you're right. Hotter heads may prevail, but I think the smart thing here is to continue to ignore North Korea. I mean, North Korea has shown a continuous pattern going back a long time now. I mean, North Korea, of doing various provocative things, hoping to get attention of one sort or another. And so far, you know, from the American perspective, at least, the Obama administration has not taken the bait. Like, you know, both Clinton and the first Bush at various, or second Bush, at various points did things where, you know, North Korea did something provocative, and then they said, okay, promise to stop, and we'll give you X, Y, or Z. We'll give you some money. Right. We'll build like a power plant for you. Whatever.
That stopped working. That doesn't work anymore.
Well, what happened every time is, you know, for a short amount of time,
there we
you
go.
Know, they wait long fine, enough to collect the and then they'd start doing it again. You know, and and so the new policy, which what is it? I forget it's called. I want to say like productive procrastination or something, but it's not that. But it's some euphemism for basically wait them out, wait for the current North Korean leader to die, and see what the next one does. You know, and that's essentially, you know, the American government's policy right now is don't really engage or do much until something changes. And to me, that seems like it's smart right now. You know, I think it would not necessarily be smart for the South Koreans to go in and say, fuck it, we're attacking North Korea. I think that's just, yeah, maybe it would work out okay, but it's just very volatile if something like that happens.
Yeah. Well, anyway, all right, so that was a North Korea. By the way, just to give you a nice little tidbit, so Steve Jobs feels all smug. My Safari crashed. Reason for crash, Flash player.
You still have that Flash thing turned on. Come on.
Yes.
Okay. So let's take a break, and we'll talk a little bit about tech stuff for our last segment. We'll be back after this.
Trouble the talking, using your conference account information.
By the way, I want to once again put out an appeal for additional things for me to use as breaks. You know, I could sing another song.
Additional things to use as breaks? Oh, as breaks. I thought as breaks, what, for your car? I was like,
you know, my car is in bad shape. But I don't.
I was like, well, I can send you an anchor, I guess. I don't know. I was like thinking, but I'm like.
You know, I it's not yet at the point where I have to like hold something out the window and push it against the wheels to stop. No, it's not there.
No, you mean a break, as in, you know, break between
yeah.
segments.
And,
so.
And, oh, I should mention for completeness, because I didn't. What we ended up with is a 2007 Volkswagen Passat 2.0T wagon. We put about half down in cash and financed the rest. Over.
It's a nice, comfortable vehicle. I've been in it. I like it.
Yeah. So we've had it less than 24 hours, but we're happy so far. We drove around a little bit. It's nice. You know, it's cool.
Well, my wife has a 2008 Volkswagen GTI that has the same engine as the one in your car, and it's like quite a nice engine. I like it.
Okay. There we go. So anyway, I was saying brakes. Like, I'm getting bored. I have 8 brakes in rotation right now. I had 10, but I killed a couple of them because I wasn't too thrilled with them anymore. But there are now 8 brakes that I have in rotation that I pick randomly from every time I take a break. I'd like to have some new, different ones. And, you know, I could warble into a microphone and make another stupid little song, but I'd rather have something interesting. So if any of our listeners have any ideas, or even if you want to like record a little audio thing that you think would be cool,
listen,
send it to me.
If you want to promote something and you want us to promote it, send us whatever the heck it is, and we'll make it into. I'll go and I'll make it into a break, and we'll put it in the show.
There you go. So send it to ablesmay@ablesmay.com. I'll pass it on to Yvonne if appropriate. Send us stuff. Anyway, we wanted to talk about some tech stuff real quick. So the first thing,
Microsoft Store. So you went to the Microsoft Store.
I just wanted to mention.
Wow.
I made some comments about the Microsoft Store when, you know, about how they were just they had to do all this stuff for their opening to get people in and blah blah blah. I will admit I went to the store 3 or 4 days after they opened. All of the, you know, there were no more like celebrities hanging out. There were no more concerts. But I went there and the place was fucking packed, you know.
Oh.
Now, admittedly, it was still the first week. We'll have to see how it is after a month. But the place was freaking packed. I mentioned it's a few hundred feet down from the Apple Store in our local mall. It's like 3 times the size. Like, now, the Apple Store...
Well, it better be. I mean, given it's in their hometown, I mean, it better be, you know.
By the way, I've been to... The sort of flagship Apple stores like in Manhattan, and
yeah.
what we have in our mall is not one of those. What we have in our mall is one of the little Apple stores. You know, it's relatively small. The size of this Windows store was more like the size of the flagship Apple stores I've been in. It was huge. It was big. It was super crowded. I admit to like, you know, I walked around. But it was so crowded, I was like, I'm not really hanging out looking at much. Like, I picked up a Windows phone and pushed a couple buttons, a Windows Phone 7. But, like, I didn't hang out to, like, play with it because, like, people were jostling all around and it was crowded. There were a few tablets around. I saw them. I didn't hang out because there were lines of people there. There was, like, a Kinect demonstration area and, like, people were playing the games, but there was a huge crowd around that and lines. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's been pretty popular, actually. So, yeah, the Kinect.
That looks pretty cool, you know?
Yeah, I know. I know. That's actually pretty cool, I must admit. Yep.
Yeah, so, and then they had a bunch of laptops and stuff out. And, you know, I did have, as I walked around the laptops, I'm like, those all look kind of clunky. And the tablets from a distance look kind of clunky. But, and of course, this thing, like, all this stuff is, you know, not Microsoft. You know, like, Microsoft has the software on it, but, of course, there is no Microsoft computer. There are, you know, all sorts of brands.
It's all Samsung, HP, Dell, whatever.
Yeah,
exactly. You know.
So, you know, but, you know, so they had some interesting stuff. You know, I would have looked longer, but it was crowded. And I will give them the fact that 3 days after opening, it was still fucking crowded. And I, you know, honestly, I wasn't sure if it would be. But, it, you know, it was. And good for them. I'll report again next time I walk by the place. And if it's not like super crowded, I'll run in and look at more stuff. But, you know, basically, yeah.
Aside from the Kinect, anything else interesting that you saw there?
No.
No. Yeah, okay.
There were other, you know, people were looking at some of the tablets. People were looking at some of the laptops. I mean, people were looking at a bunch of stuff. You know, I didn't see anything that I was like, ooh, I want that. I want to look at that more. I don't know how much people were buying. I've seen a few things online where people have compared, not just for this Windows Store, but for Windows Store in general, sort of, you know, where people sat down outside the stores and watched how many people came out with, you know, bags that indicated they'd purchased something. And the purchase rate at Apple stores was like 2 or 3 times as much as at the Windows stores.
It only just started. But
we'll see, you know, it only just started. But one thing is, this is another, the damn thing looks like an Apple store. Yeah. The style of it is, you know, looks like an Apple store. I mean, you know, the sort of lots of white, the tables, you know, there are things that
look different. Why reinvent something that works?
Exactly. Well, you know, this is Microsoft's modus operandi in almost everything. You know, somebody else does some innovation and does some interesting stuff, and then Microsoft, you know, imitates it and tweaks some things and tries to put their own spin on it, but it's clearly an imitation of the other thing. And because of their position in the market, sometimes they're able to make a decent amount of cash anyway. I will say the Windows Phone is one exception. It doesn't look like an iPhone. You know, the Android phones to some degree like feel like they look. Yeah, they
like, you know, an iPhone. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, they have some of the UI elements are very similar. I mean, some aren't, but you know, it looks like it's you could see the connection with an iPhone. The Windows Phone looks, yeah, the way the screen is, it looks completely different. So I'll give them that. Anyway, so that's enough about my Windows Store update. You were going to talk about tablets.
Well, the one thing is that you went there and you played with the tablets. I did grab.
I played with the phone. I didn't actually play with the tablet. I'll give it that.
You didn't grab any of the tablet?
What I grabbed
the other day is this. What is this? The Samsung Galaxy tablet, which I believe is an Android one. Yeah, it is an Android one. And I grabbed that thing. And, you know, Steve Jobs had been talking about, there were certain people talking about 7-inch tablets. And he went off on a rant about it because he said, you know, it's a ridiculous form factor. It's too small. I mean, it's too big to be really portable to put in your pocket. Might as well make it small like a phone. And it's too small to the screen becomes really usable. And I heard that and I'm like, you know, Steve Jobs, I know, likes to rant. He's such a perfectionist. Let me take a look at this. He's right. That is I grabbed the stupid tablet and I'm realizing it is small, but damn it, it is small. It is so small that the fucking screen is useless, in my opinion. I mean, and you gain nothing by making the screen smaller, which is the point. I'm like, there isn't an additional portability factor. It's not small enough that you're going to fit it in your pocket. The iPad, as it is right now, already size-wise, is small enough to fit into a purse, to carry around, to do whatever. What the fuck the point is making it smaller other than make it less usable? So I actually have to agree. I saw the size factor, and I tried to play around with it. And I said, this is ridiculous. The screen's too small. It's stupid. I mean, it's like if you've got the choice of buying the one with a 9-inch screen or buying this one, there is no reason in the world you would buy this size. I don't see the advantage. So that was the one thing that I just realized that I'm like, you know, whoever the hell did the design, I guess they tried to make something different. But just, you know, but sometimes different isn't necessarily better.
Do you see the same sort of size factor for the smaller MacBook Air? They came out with two sizes this last time around.
I actually have not. I have not tried. I haven't grabbed them. I haven't. Okay. I haven't gone to the store to see either of them. I don't know.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance?
No. I played with the bigger one. I didn't play with the little one, I don't think. But because it's the same kind of thing. It's a smaller device, but it's still not small enough to be really portable. But that's true of most sort of netbooky kind of things. And I don't know. It was interesting after like Steve Jobs' rant against netbooks when the iPad came out, I'm like, you know, the smaller of the two MacBook Airs, that's kind of what it is. You know.
It is kind of like that. I mean, you know, except the one thing is that unlike, I mean, I got to admit, I've grabbed a couple of these netbooks. I mean, they're clunky pieces of shit.
Okay.
I mean, they really, I mean, they are so clunky. I'm just like, you know, fuck. I mean, they're like a fucking brick. I mean, it may be small, but they're heavy. They have a really short battery life. I mean, I don't know. I grabbed somebody who went and for some reason bought one with SSD storage on one of these and wound up paying $400 for it or something. It had 32 gigs of disk space.
Right.
And I'm like, what the fuck is this thing good for? Okay. What are you going to do with this? I mean, right now, it's like if you're going to store anything, even like a few movies, like two or three, you want to carry them because you want to go on something or whatever, or a few songs, you're fucked. You're out of storage. So I was like, okay,
yeah, you can get iPods with more than that.
Exactly. I'm like, what the hell? You can get an iPod with more storage than this. What the hell good is this damn thing for? And it costs $400. So I don't know. So anyway, that's what I saw.
So any more to say about tablets, or do you want to do the tech turkeys or whatever they're called real quick?
Well, give it we could go through a couple of them over the tech turkeys. I got a couple of them over here. I think the first one, actually, the thing is I got to pull that back up because my browser,
your browser crashed. Well, tell us where it is anyway, so I can bring it up and our listeners.
I'm opening it up. It is on news.com. One of the front stories there is top 10 turkeys of 2010. Okay, so if you go there right now. Basically, it'll probably be, even if you go there, you don't have to search. Just go to news.com and type in top tech turkeys.
Yeah, and I would read you this URL, okay? But it's a bunch of numbers and crap. So
it's a bunch of numbers and crap. So yeah.
But screw that too. So go ahead.
No. Just go there and you'll find it real easily. So the number one was, it's not the iPhone. It's the way you're holding it. Okay. Memo to Apple. Don't hi-hat your customers no matter how pesky they become, okay? So the whole iPhone antenna gate, that was one of the top 10 turkeys of the year, okay?
I've got my damn iPhone for iPhone 4 for a couple weeks now. I have never had an issue. And
My brother's got one.
I've tried the bumper and... Yeah, I like the bumper. I actually like how it feels in the bumper. But a bunch of the, like, when I want to plug it in, I have to, like, take the thing off for half the...
You have to take it off. Right.
Not for everything. Like, some cords and accessories are specifically made for the iPhone 4, and you don't have to because they're made to accommodate the bumper. But lots of the shit I already have, I have to take off the bumper. And so, once I had to take it off and on a couple of times, I'm like, fuck that. And I don't put it on very often anymore. And I got another little case for it. But honestly, I haven't been really using that either. So most of the time, the thing's naked in my pocket. But yeah, and it's been doing fine. And I certainly hold it in my left hand. My hand touches the spot of death, and I've never had a damn issue. Not at all. So.
Anyway. And neither has anybody else I know that has an iPhone 4. So anyway, now, all right. That was one.
Again, I think this is a New York and San Francisco problem.
I think so too. Of
because
course,
the signal is already the crap problem. There. Anyway, go ahead.
Now, I could not replicate the problem in San Francisco either. But anyway, okay. I must digress.
Okay, so
number two that they had was So number two they had was HB CEO banging a soft porn star. Okay, that was number two.
And by the way, I'm looking at the article. They count down from 10 to 1. You're going the other way, right?
Yeah, I went from 1 to 10. Yeah, I know. I'm going that way. I'm sorry.
And they've paginated it too, which is one of those I hate. I know they do it for like.
I know it's very annoying. Whatever,
but
it's very annoying. Like, I agree.
Every page has like one fucking paragraph. You know, it's like.
Yeah. I know it's a pain in my ass. Okay. I know. Anyway, number three was Google Street View that was spying on you, and the whole thing about how many people were complaining about. you know, the triangulation of the Wi-Fi hotspots, and even like in Germany, I know that there were, you know, there were a whole bunch of issues with what they were taking pictures, and they were violating privacy and a whole bunch of stuff. And so, you know, so that was one of the things about it. I don't know. I think that's a red herring, because, you know, there right now there are so many people that have done the triangulation of hotspots.
Yeah.
That I just don't understand why this was such a big brouhaha, the whole thing about the hotspot. So anyway, then they talked about number four, the Gizmodo gate, when the iPhone 4 got pilfered.
Yep,
okay,
yep.
And sold. Let's see, number five. I'm going there.
TSA
baby, and the naked scanners, which we've already gone over
a lot.
You have a cool picture of.
Some guy naked.
You have a pretty good... Yeah, some guy naked. There you go. Like, you can't really see him. I mean, seriously. Anyway. All right. So number six, Juju. Now, I never heard about this tablet.
Yeah, I did.
This tablet?
Yeah, I've heard about this tablet.
Okay. So the Juju tablet was supposed to, you know, talk about, you know... they mentioned the Juju tablet was plagued by bad juju from the get-go. It seemed like a good idea when TechCrunch editor Michael Arrington began talking up his dream of building the CrunchPad web tablet. Well, anyway, bottom line is that they launched it at the end of December 2009, but they never really ramped up shipments until after the iPad came out.
I will add, before they launched it, there was a whole rigmarole where the manufacturers and Michael Arrington of who were partnering on this had a spat, and they fought, and like
right.
Arrington, yeah, it was a freaking mess. So anyway,
and he left, and even after that,
it was more
honestly,
kicked
when
out
it did
than
launch,
left, but yeah, go ahead.
But in the end, anyway, the other bad thing was that anyway, it sucked.
Yes.
Okay. Which didn't help. Okay. In the end. So that was not good. Okay. So that was number six. Number seven, the Microsoft Kin. Now.
Yes.
I don't know if you, I saw the ads for this thing launched. This was the shortest lived ever.
It was like
phone launch I've ever seen in my life. It was close to that.
From the release,
it was ridiculous.
From the release date that they went on sale to the date that they announced they were discontinuing the product was like a couple weeks.
Right.
Maybe it was a month.
Which is just bizarre. And you know, but they had laid out a huge marketing push. I remember seeing the ads and stuff. They go do that.
But here's the
just
thing.
To go and kill it this quickly.
But here's the thing. I mean, part of this, and maybe some of this was rumors, but the reason when they were talking about killing it, people also posted some leaked sales numbers, where in the first 2 weeks, the number of these they'd sold nationwide, you know how the iPhone launches and, you know, they're like, we sold 2 million,
million.
In the first
2 million,
day or whatever.
3 million.
They'd sold like 500.
Sold 300. Well, I understand, but you know, so apparently another thing about it was that apparently the data pricing plan was ridiculously expensive. Okay, so anyway, bottom line is that it got killed. Okay, super quick, but you know, so that was one of the shortest lived, you know, smartphone launches ever. Okay, so that was the Kin. So that was the number seven. Number eight, Adobe and Apple and the whole Flash thing on the iPhone thing. Okay. And the Flash in general thing.
Yeah.
You know, I know that you don't like Flash either, so we know where that stands. I just continue to be annoyed at – there's got to be some better middle ground here somewhere, because I just still continue to be annoyed at using my iPad and still getting to a number of sites where I can't see all the content.
Well, okay? you know, you can fix a lot of that now. There's an alternative browser in the iPhone App Store that does Flash.
Oh, what's the name of that one?
I'm going to forget. Hold on. Yeah, keep talking. I'll look it up while you look at other stuff.
Okay, so that's that one. So, number nine. Google TV. And the reason why Google TV is a number nine is because
it's called
Google
Skyfire.
Decides to launch Skyfire. Okay, I'll take a look at it. Okay. It the reason why Google TV makes number nine is because Google decides to launch a TV product
and then all the networks
but never
them.
Exactly, because they never negotiated with any of the network providers. So all the network providers decided, screw you, we're not giving you anything.
You know, here's the thing on that, though. That what they did is they're not like doing it some special way. It's via the browser. And so they're blocking a browser agent here. Like, Google should say, fuck them. From now on, our tablet is reporting its browser agent as IE. You know, screw it. Because there's no standard on those browser agents. There's no actual requirement. It's just, you know, blah, blah, blah. They could get around these blocks if they wanted to. Because fundamentally, in the end, what they have on the Google TV is a browser accessing things that are made available on the web. It just happens that they're showing it on the television instead of on a computer. So I you know, they may or may not do that because of wanting to do good things with those relationships. But you know,
I don't see how that would really improve the relationship with the networks.
I know, I think the network.
I mean, that would just be a war declaration. So
the fucking entertainment industry needs war declared on it. I mean, and the tech industry is the people who could do it. You know,
I think that they can declare war to a certain extent, but even still, right now, most of the content that people want to watch is still content that is being generated by a lot of these large media companies. Whether you want to pay for it or not, I mean, that's still the reality. So as long as this is the content that people want to watch.
What needs to happen here is the big tech players need to just suck it up and buy some of these big media companies and then just change this whole thing from the inside.
Now that could be a move. So that's number nine.
And Apple and Google are big enough that they could snap up some of these guys
right now. They could just ink cash.
Because the entertainment industry has not been doing well. Their prices have been falling. Apple and Google have been going through the roof. They have tons of cash on hand. They could just say, you know, fuck it, assholes.
You don't want to make a deal. Fine, we're buying you out. Here it is. Boom.
Exactly.
Done. So, fire all your asses. Okay.
And given the way the entertainment industry has worked, you know, it seems like they're not really going to get it and come to the party properly until either their business is completely decimated by the fact that everybody has passed them by or somebody buys them like that.
Well, look at Blockbuster, for example. We're just talking about that. You know, I have somebody who still works at a Blockbuster.
Okay.
And I was like talking to her, are you serious? I mean, you still, and I'm like, well, how busy is the store? It's always empty, but they still keep the store open anyway. They haven't completely folded. Okay. But if you want to talk about an example of somebody that just let distribution pass it by versus Netflix, for example, that, you know, they define themselves, we're a media distribution company. We'll distribute the media however the heck the media needs to be gotten to people. That's it. And, of course, now the TV networks and the movie studios are in a little bit of a huff with Netflix because they're being so successful. But, you know, you got to look at your business like that. So, anyway. All right. So, number 10, Dig.
Yes.
Okay? I mean, this looked a couple of years ago to be one of the next big things. And I don't know. Well, I never used it. Did you ever use Dig?
Let's see. I was never a contributor to Dig. I never dug things. I never shared things with my friends and did all that crap. But I would go there to find interesting stories. And I subscribed to their RSS feed and looked at stuff there. I just went to the Dig homepage while we were talking about for the first time in forever, and some of their changes there. I'm like, yeah, this is crap. You know, here's the thing. Like, and you know, this to me, like this kind of stuff. You know, for a while I was checking FARC religiously. It was where I got the sort of fun stories with an interesting twist on them. You know, then it was Dig. You know, at one point in the past, it was Slashdot. You know, these things, by their very nature, tend to get popular for a few years and then go away and get replaced by something else. I'm not all that surprised. And, you know, part of it is, like, a lot of these things, you know, at some point they're like, oh, shit, how do we make money? And then they start doing various things. and then they start doing various things to try to monetize, and they fuck things up in the process, and people go elsewhere. I mean, like, part of this thing with Dig was, you know, they introduced, you know, essentially some... the whole thing of Dig was it was a democratic thing. People would propose, it would submit links, and then people would dig them up or down, and they'd get a score based on how many people had dug them that would bring things to the top, and you'd see them on the front page or wherever. So a lot of their changes that they introduced this last time around were things that sort of gave preference to certain articles over others from, you know, from some major news sites and from some other stuff like that.
Right.
It's like, well, yeah, that sort of violates.
Then what's the point?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if I want to know what the New York Times or the BBC says, I can go there. You know, it's the fact that it's aggregated. It's the fact that you're not giving preference other than what the community likes that makes it appealing. And so, like, a lot of Dig people have now gone to Reddit, apparently, which is owned by Condé Nast. I experimented a little bit with it too, and I've dumped it at this point as well. But I don't know. It's like, if people come into something like Dig expecting that it will grow into a media empire or something like that, sorry, it's probably not. These things tend...
It's not likely.
Go.
I mean, it can't happen. But
I
think
here's the thing, too, with Dig. Like, they had a few opportunities to be bought, and they didn't take them. And
take the money, which was the idiocy.
They waited too long. I mean, like, that's the kind of thing. Like, with this kind of thing, if you've skyrocketed, then you got to realize that that's probably a temporary situation. Cash in while you can, you know.
Well, at least cash in part of it. I mean, fine. So you take the IPO money, you keep a percentage, you take the 50, 100 million that they put in pocket, and fuck it. Okay, you know, well, later on you could become still a billionaire, but, you know, at least you cashed in part of it, but they didn't do that. Yeah, you know, but these changes, like you mentioned here, kind of remind me of the fucking changes at eBay, for example, right now. I mean, you know, and eBay has been – revenue and sales and profits has been struggling, and honestly, I've stopped using the fucking thing. Because they basically did the same fucking thing. I mean, all of a sudden now you go into the stupid thing. All you see are, you know, companies and like retailers and all those people putting shit in fucking eBay. And I'm like, well, if I wanted that, I'd fucking go to freaking Google Shopper or whatever. Like, do a search and like, you know, even the news, CNET tech shopper or whatever the fuck and do that shit. Why the hell do I need eBay? It wasn't the point of fucking eBay.
Well, you know, a lot of these things, I mean, you know, it's the culture about maximizing growth forever lead people to do fucking stupid things. Like, if you've got something that works and works well and you've got people that love the fucking thing, but it's only growing slowly or even it's flat, you know, at some point you have to say,
it's okay. That's,
you know.
It's all right.
Maybe you have.
Maybe this is the maximum of this idea. Maybe we won't continue to get a growth ad infinitum. I mean, maybe this is the size of the market.
Yeah.
You know?
Growing.
This is all we can capture.
Growing exponentially forever is a pipe dream. At some point, a business becomes mature and should become a stable, ongoing thing. Like, and chasing.
What you can look for. Is new businesses, okay?
But at some point, like, if you keep chasing exponential growth forever, you're going to implode because at some point you just can't. And you're in the vain attempt to get there, you're going to destroy the thing that people loved about you.
Exactly. And that's the one thing. I'm like, you know, say if eBay, for example, decided, okay, you know, we want to grow, so let's create a separate shopping called ebaybuydirect.com, which, you know, you can go to that site, and instead of shopping from individual buyers, you know, you go and you shop from companies, and we'll aggregate them in there and whatever and whatnot. But that's not what they did. What they did is they fucking crowded out the individual sellers by fucking putting corporations in fucking eBay, which just kind of defeated the whole purpose of what eBay was in the first place.
Right. There may well be many companies that are still on the exponential growth track and will be for a while and blah, blah, blah. You certainly get exponential growth for a while, but I think one of the signs, hopefully you have companies that will recognize when they are getting to the point where that's no longer viable and then adapt and say, okay, we're a mature business now. We're going to run it like a mature business, not as a growth company, and making that transition at the right point is an important inflection point in the lifespan of any healthy company. And what I've seen, we're talking about it with Dig, with eBay, you could probably give other examples, are companies who basically fucked that transition up and just...
Well, I think that the problem is that the reason why they fucked it up is because they didn't understand, when I worked at HP, one of the things that you saw about HP was that if you looked at the products that they sold today versus what was the core of their business 30 years ago, there were very different products. Point is that in terms of growing, okay, if you cannot continue growing exponentially, certainly if you're only sticking to the same product which you're trying to make it grow ad infinitum, it doesn't work. You can continue growing, and maybe not exponentially, but continue a good growth if you keep finding new business ideas regarding your main core concept. So if your main core concept is, say, for example, well, we are in the media distribution business, instead of saying, say, I just rent DVDs, you will find, maybe we can do it electronically. Maybe we can do it this way. Maybe we can do it that way. If you're in the technology business and your idea is to find and explore new technologies and figure out how to make products that a consumer or a business can use to do more effectively, well, that leads you, for example, to create all the types of test and measurement equipment that HP created, printers, calculators, DVD burners, for example, LED lights, for example. The new color LED lighting was an invention at HP Labs many years ago, in the 80s and 90s. That's why, all the LED – and that was bought by – it was sold to Philips, and that's why almost all the LED lighting is based on a patent that HP created 20 years ago. So their idea was a more core idea. We have intelligent researchers that can go and create new technologies. Let's go out and let's create those and seek, new businesses. I mean, Google is, I think, in that kind of a business model itself. I mean, yeah, they started with search and whatever, but you look at all the different ideas that Google is spawning about, in terms of mapping, in terms of operating systems, in terms of telephones, in terms of video, in terms of anything. So, it's just that when companies, for example, stick to that same thing, and then what they try to do is fuck up the – I mean, Google didn't go and fuck up search in order to create a phone. Okay?
Right.
But that's what eBay did. eBay tried to grow into something else, and what they did is fuck up their core business. And that's just stupid. So, anyway.
So, on that note, we're well over an hour, so we need to wrap it up. Thanks, Yvonne, for another exciting conversation.
You're welcome.
And as usual, everybody, email me, ablesmay@ablesmay.com. Like I said, I'm looking for those break ideas. I want good ideas for breaks, or even good recordings, or anything, just fun stuff to put in there. Like Yvonne said, if you want to promote anything, toss us a line. Not like you're going to get tons of business from us. Come on. It's something we do as a hobby, but still, get it in here.
We'll do something.
Hey, we're not charging you.
It's better than nothing.
Yeah, we're going to monetize. Yeah, we're going to monetize.
We're going to monetize Crumbage's Corner now. Oh, God. Yes, there we go.
$100, we'll say whatever the fuck you want. So, anyway.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm so pretty. Oh, so pretty. No, okay. All right.
Yes.
Said for $100, we'll say anything you want.
What could our new core business be, Yvonne?
What could our new core business could be? I don't know. We could go into the porn industry. That's already been done.
Yeah, okay. No. And, Yvonne, I'm sorry. I don't want to do porn with you.
Neither do I. So we're okay then. All right. We're in total agreement on one idea. Okay, good.
So anyway, email us. Tell your friends to listen and tune in next week. Bye for now. See you later. Adios. Bye. Whatever. Aloha. Say goodbye, Yvonne.
Sayonara. There you go.
Okay. Bye.